The next case this morning is number 02-2655, Purdue Research Foundation against Signifi et al. Mr. Keeley.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court, William Keeley for the appellant, Purdue Research Foundation. Overarching all of the questions presented in the briefing to this Court is a single question, and that is, does constitutional due process require, on the facts of this case, that Purdue go to France to enforce three contracts? From that question, we can come down to the facts. The facts are largely undisputed, although they are somewhat incomplete due in part to the fact that discovery was still occurring at the time that the district court ruled. But we do know several things.
Discovery on this jurisdictional issue?
Yes, Your Honor. There was a motion to compel filed by Purdue that was pending, had been briefed, and was never ruled upon at the time that the district court ruled.
And what were you seeking in this motion to compel?
We had, with leave of the court, obtained a 30B6 deposition of the defendant. I went to New York to conduct that deposition. The deposition testimony in Purdue's view was unprepared and incomplete with respect primarily to questions of Sanofi France's actual activities in Indiana. We had obtained some document discovery on those issues relating to Lilly and the like as developed in our briefs. But the 30B6 designee was fundamentally underprepared and gave highly incomplete and evasive answers to those questions. We presented that squarely to the district court. That motion was never ruled.
Before you go any further, I have one other question. That is, could you make it clear, and the briefs de-emphasize this point, what were you seeking in this lawsuit?
These three contracts, Your Honor, were contracts involving research sponsored by Sterling Drug at Purdue, by Purdue researchers, where Sterling Drug money and materials would come to Purdue and be the subject of research. Part of what the contract gave Purdue was an entitlement, if that research yielded fruit, to participate in the financial upside of that fruit in a variety of ways. It came to light in the last year or two that, in fact, this research had borne fruit, that a drug known as Plecanarol and possibly some other drugs were about to come onto the market, or at least come before government agencies to come onto the market, and therefore have a tangible commercial value. Purdue, upon learning those facts and knowing of the connection between those drugs and the research that was in this contract, these three contracts, sought to enforce the contracts to participate in the revenue from those drugs. The contracts have a formula for that purpose.
So, at this point, at least, this is a contract about the profits from that research, am I correct?
Correct.
So we're not talking about your client having to spend a great deal of time at Purdue and travel in Indiana, supply various materials in Indiana or anything of that nature, are we, under what you're asking for in this lawsuit?
The research has already occurred.
It has occurred.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, it occurred some years ago, and by the nature of the drug process.
That was not made clear in the briefs, and it perhaps is crucial in the case.
What we do know from the facts, Your Honor, is that these contracts were Indiana contracts in every sense. They were undertaken in Indiana for work in Indiana, and quite critically, they provided, in each case, for the application of Indiana law.
The choice of law clause does not necessarily mean that one has jurisdiction would be in Indiana.
It is not dispositive, but it is important, and the Burger King case teaches us that quite explicitly. In the Burger King case, the Supreme Court said that a choice of law clause shows a deliberate affiliation with the forum state and the reasonable foreseeability of possible litigation there.
That wasn't a franchisor-franchisee ongoing relationship, wasn't it?
That it was, Your Honor, but there
are... A very different relationship than your client will have with this French corporation at this point in time, at least.
Quite critically here is that my client didn't choose this French corporation. This French corporation is a successor to the original obligor, Sterling. The Ogden Engineering case also dealt with this choice of law issue and held that a choice of law clause is a fact favoring jurisdiction in the chosen forum that is the subject of the choice of law clause. The fact that the contract was to be construed according to Indiana law demonstrates that the defendants invoked the benefits and protections of the state of Indiana. And then goes on from there. That's from the Ogden Engineering versus St. Louis ship
case. Don't the contacts that you're saying bring it within the ambit of Indiana law have to deal with your contracts? The contacts deal with your contracts?
Some, but there are others. What we have is a party.
RAR Turner Diesel?
RAR, while interesting on the law, is distinguishable on the facts because that was a contract that was fundamentally to be performed in Scotland, happened to involve an Illinois party, but as I read the court's decision in that case, the court ultimately, specifically, based its ruling on the fact that the locus of the contract was elsewhere, that it was not in Illinois, but rather in Scotland.
Well, it had contacts with the Illinois Corporation, but in distinct and separate matters.
That's correct. Here we have a contract that has, in every respect, its locus in Indiana, and in no respect, any locus in France, none whatsoever. There is nothing about these contracts that connotes France.
Well, I'm talking about the contacts of the French corporation.
This corporation is a corporation that has repeatedly and deliberately come into Indiana to do business with Lilly, to do business with the marketing of its products. What we do have is a contact that was by consent. We have an undisputed fact here, which was that this defendant assumed this contract and that it did so knowing that by assuming the contract, it would subject itself to the liabilities of the contract. That is a key fact because under this law...
Let me interrupt you just a second. The contacts were not with Purdue, though.
The contacts prior to the assumption of the contracts were not with Purdue. But the assumption of the contracts themselves was, in a very important sense, a contact with Purdue. What this defendant chose to do was to take on contractual relationships with Purdue. That was a conscious, informed, knowing decision. And we are taught that choice and consent matters in this area. Rule 25C is perhaps the closest reference point that we have in the rules of civil procedure. And there we're told that if an assumption such as this one occurs in the middle of a case, that then surely, clearly, the assuming party is subject to the personal jurisdiction of the court where the case pends. The only difference we have here, in the sense of Rule 25C, is that the assumption occurred prior to the filing of the complaint. But substantively, the effect is the same as if Sanofi had bought these contracts from Sterling in the middle of the trial. Instead, in the middle of the proceeding. Instead, it bought them prior to the inception of the proceeding. Rule 25C gives us a clear answer, and the few courts that have looked at this have, in some instances, looked to Rule 25C for guidance. And they found that guidance there and found that it is appropriate, based in part on the sensibilities of Rule 25C, to say to somebody who chooses to assume a contract that they are stepping into the shoes of the predecessor obligor for purposes of personal jurisdiction analysis. There is no stronger basis of equity and fairness under the due process clause than consent. We are not talking here ultimately about indirect and inadvertent facts and circumstances. We are talking about a conscious decision to buy contracts, undertake the obligations of those contracts. There is a real problem as a precedent if what this case comes to stand for is the proposition that somebody can make that informed, deliberate decision to reach in and buy contracts that in every sense have their locus in a jurisdiction and export those contracts for enforcement purposes, not only out of state, but out of the country. So that what we now have is a defendant that apparently, although they hold their cards on this, seems to think that the best and most appropriate court from a due process perspective to think about what happened at Purdue and to think about Indiana law is a court in Paris, France. In all this briefing, not a single case has come remotely close to endorsing that proposition. I submit for the simple reason that it's a lousy proposition. It would be a bad precedent. It is important to note here, too, on the facts, that ultimately we are, in fact, for the minimum contacts, looking at a corporation whose parent itself has come into Indiana. There is some discussion in the briefing that at times I think gets rather fine-toothed about parent and subsidiary. The parent itself here, Sanofi France, has come into this state to buy these contracts. Sanofi France did that, not its domestic subsidiary, Sanofi France. And Sanofi France itself, not the domestic subsidiary, is, even in the moment, now, continuing to come into this state to do business with Eli Lilly. Those facts are undisputed. Those facts were still being developed by the motion to compel.
What does the relationship with Eli Lilly have to do with this lawsuit? Are you maintaining this has something to do with the specifically affiliating nexus you've been talking about?
It does in a couple of respects, Your Honor. The Eli Lilly relationship is part of this defendant's overall effort to do business in the pharmaceutical arena in this state, as are the Purdue contracts.
It sounds more like a generally affiliating nexus, that you're trying to make the argument that they have some kind of a generally affiliating nexus with the state of Indiana.
Both with Purdue and with Eli Lilly, what this defendant has tried to do is come into this state to conduct research and development in the drug industry. So on the spectrum between specific and general, yes, there are aspects of both. It is specific to their R&D, but the larger issue is the fundamental fairness. This is not a defendant that has never touched the state of Indiana, not by a long shot. A minimum contacts analysis does teach us that if there are contacts, and here we have a specific assumption, then in looking at the overall course of dealing, we can take into account those other facts in terms of fundamental fairness. There are two fallacies in the defendant's position that I wish to call attention to. The first of these I've come to identify as the timeline fallacy, and that is the fallacy that we only look at what has happened from the date of the assumption of these contracts forward and not at what the nature and history and substance of these contracts are. The case law teaches us that that is the wrong approach. The case law says we are to look at the course of dealing. It says that we are to look at the substance of the contracts. And as recently as the Hyatt versus Coco case out of this court specifically rejected the use of a division on a timeline to wall off facts that the defendant found unfavorable to their personal jurisdiction argument. This court said quite clearly, no, we are going to be legal realists here. We're going to look at the entire history of these dealings, of these contracts, in order to determine what the gravamen of the due process analysis should be. We have the same proposition here. It does matter that these contracts were Indiana contracts, were in their early years performed at Purdue, were done under Indiana law, were expressly assumed with all those knowledges and all that knowledge and all those facts in mind. The second fallacy is the fallacy of suggesting that in terms of thinking about successorship, that it matters how many contracts were assumed. One thing we know from the law, without dispute, is that if this defendant is a successor, in fact, to Sterling Drug, then it is subject to personal jurisdiction to the same extent as Sterling Drug. We also know that, of course, an asset sale has some presumptions of non-successorship, but those presumptions can be overcome, and they were overcome here on the facts, because the primary exception to that wall is if there is an express assumption of liability. And we have here, undisputed, an express assumption of liability. Even then...
Mr. Keeley, I'll have to ask you to wind up. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Mr. Maloro.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Thomas Maloro for Sanofi Synthelabo S.A., which parties have referred to here as Sanofi France. I'd like to start by addressing a point that Mr. Keeley made in his argument. This contract that is the subject of the substance of the lawsuit relates to a drug called Plecanoril, as he referenced, which is a cold remedy. It's not on the market. It's not been approved by the FDA. And in his argument, counsel said that our client, Sanofi France, came into the state of Indiana to do two things. Counsel said that our client came into the state of Indiana to purchase the contract and came into the state of Indiana to do business with Eli Lilly. I would respectfully submit that the first of those is factually incorrect, and the second is legally irrelevant. Sanofi France did not come into the state of Indiana at all with respect to the purchase of the contract at issue in this lawsuit. Sanofi France dealt with Sterling Drug, which was not located in the state of Indiana. Sanofi France, I don't know where the dealings were, but they were not in Indiana. They were either in France or in New York, where Sterling Drug was. So simply put, Sanofi France didn't come to the state of Indiana at all with respect to purchasing the contract at issue in this suit. With regard to the contacts with Eli Lilly, those confidentiality agreements, the contacts referred to in the party's papers, have nothing to do with the drug Plecanoril, nothing at all. There have been no dealings in the state of Indiana between Eli Lilly and Sanofi France related to Plecanoril, and the record is undisputed in that sense. Mr. Keeley referred to a spectrum between general and specific jurisdiction. There is no spectrum or hybrid between general and specific jurisdiction under the Due Process Clause and the precedent from the Supreme Court and this Court that was recently reaffirmed by this Court in the Hyatt v. Coco case. The district court here correctly recognized that you have to analyze general jurisdiction principles and you have to analyze specific jurisdiction principles, and there are different standards that are at play with respect to each of those principles. With regard to the specific personal jurisdiction analysis in this case, the record is undisputed. There have been zero contacts between Sanofi France and the state of Indiana with respect to this contract.
You did buy a contract, did assume a contractual obligation with a company in Indiana, and that obligation did specify that it would be governed by the law of Indiana.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And you did the due diligence on this deal. They knew what they were buying there.
That's correct, Your Honor. And when our client read that contract, presumably they read it before they bought it, and when they looked at it, they found two things. They found a clause in the contract that said that Indiana law was going to apply. That's at page 58 of the supplemental appendix, paragraph 18 of the agreement. and they found no clause that said that the parties would stipulate to personal jurisdiction in the state of Indiana. The Supreme Court in the Burger King case, this court in the RAR case, has expressly noted that parties are free to stipulate to personal jurisdiction in a particular forum if they so desire. Specific personal jurisdiction is designed so that defendants can structure their conduct so that they'll know where they will and will not be subject to suit in a particular jurisdiction for their activities. If Purdue, a large, sophisticated institution, was sufficiently interested in litigating any disputes on the contract in the state of Indiana, it could have made that part of the bargain that it made up front. It chose not to do so. Now it must simply live with the consequences of that choice.
And what are their choice? And where could they sue your client?
Well, I certainly believe that France would be one jurisdiction where our client would be subject to suit. The record has not developed whether or not our client would be subject to suit in any other jurisdictions in the U.S.
That would only be if there were some kind of generally affiliating nexus with some other state of the union, I suppose.
That's correct. And there's no record evidence that's been
excluding the possibility of transient personal jurisdiction, which I guess is still alive.
In this case, I don't know that we've got any evidence that would inform us one way or another on those issues. In this case, Sanofi France is entitled to its independent assessment of its contacts with the state of Indiana with regard to the subject matter of this suit. Every defendant is entitled to its due process evaluation of its contacts with the forum state to ascertain whether those contacts arise to the level of minimum contacts under the due process clause. All of the contacts that Purdue relies upon in this case for specific personal jurisdiction are contacts of another party, Sterling Drug.
What do you do with your colleague's argument that, in effect, you have purchased a contract and the attendant obligations, and that we should look at it from the time of the signing of the contract? Clearly, this contract, when it was signed, contemplated that Sterling Drug would have quite a few contacts with these folks at Purdue. They'd be in and out of the state.
Well, the contract originally was between Purdue and Sterling. Purdue agreed that Sterling could assign the contract under certain circumstances and did not agree with Sterling that jurisdiction would be in the state of Indiana if there were any disputes. So Purdue, in essence, knowingly entered into a bargain where it could be dealing with an unknown party.
Under what circumstances could Sterling assign the contract?
Sterling could assign the contract to a successor of substantially all of its ethical pharmaceuticals business, I believe is the language, or to an affiliate. And that's set forth in Section 15.2 of the agreement.
So there was the possibility then that Sterling could have assigned this contract to your company or another company at an earlier stage when much more activity on the part of the purchaser would be contemplated in the state of Indiana.
Absolutely. Counsel in his argument referred to a timeline fallacy. I don't think time is the relevant criteria here. We're talking about due process and jurisdiction over the person. I think you have to look at what person you're dealing with. If Sterling had assigned the contract to Sanofi France at a very early time, at which time the contract was more ongoing in terms of whatever research was being done, then presumably whatever contact Sterling is alleged to have had with Indiana, Sanofi France would have had with Indiana. And we'd be talking about a different jurisdictional analysis, perhaps. It's not a question of time. It's a question of what person you're talking about.
These contracts has some duration, I assume.
There were three contracts. In fact, only one of them directly dealt with Plecanoril. I believe they each had five-year terms. Essentially, at the time that Sanofi France purchased the contracts, the contract related to Plecanoril was done. It was defunct, and it was just a number of years later, as the application for regulatory approval for Plecanoril came about, that this dispute first started to come to light. Now, there are a number of cases that have directly addressed the issue here, and they've all held that simply purchasing a contract doesn't subject you to another party's contacts for jurisdictional purposes. And it's an important distinction between assuming someone's liabilities and not assuming somebody else's contacts for jurisdictional purposes. Sanofi France has never had a single contact with the state of Indiana concerning this contract at issue. The diligence that Your Honor referred to earlier would in fact be enormously complicated if the result that Purdue advocates were endorsed here. A party seeking to enter into a simple commercial transaction whereby it was purchasing a contract or some rights in a contract would suddenly be faced with a whole host of unknowns concerning jurisdictional possibilities that wouldn't be apparent at all from the face of the contract and might be either unknowable or knowable only through an extensive amount of due diligence, not readily ascertainable. Looking at the contract would be the beginning, not the end, of a party attempting to structure its conduct with respect to the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. And that problem could and should be remedied very easily by a party interested in maintaining personal jurisdiction in a particular forum by negotiating for and obtaining the benefit of a bargain ab initio in the contract that any disputes would be resolved in a particular forum state.
In Worldwide Volkswagen against Woodson, the Supreme Court said that not only fundamental fairness to the party defendant ought to be looked at, but that there were other factors, one of them being the interest of the forum in serving as the forum. Doesn't Indiana have an interest in serving as the forum here?
Well, I believe that there are certainly parties to contracts in a forum all the time where there's no personal jurisdiction. A party can be located, a plaintiff can be located in a jurisdiction, can be a party to a contract, and there can have been some performance in that jurisdiction. That does not ab initio say that there is such an overriding interest in the forum itself that the defendant's lack of contacts that rise to the level of due process should be overridden to satisfy the forum interest. Burger King itself says simply having a contract with a forum state doesn't give you personal jurisdiction. You must look to the contacts of the defendant to see if they rise to the constitutional level of minimum contacts. Here, that did not occur. The Eli Lilly contacts, just to address them briefly, relate again only to the possibility of general personal jurisdiction, not specific jurisdiction. The general jurisdiction standards, in the sense of the quantum of contacts or the nature of contacts, is far different from the specific personal jurisdiction standard. Substantial, continuous, extensive, and systematic contacts are required for an exercise of general personal jurisdiction. What we have here are a couple of confidentiality agreements whereby Sanofi France and Eli Lilly agreed to evaluate whether or not they wanted to be partners or collaborators on a project unrelated to Plecanarol. Certainly, random isolated confidentiality agreements of that sort, let's talk to each other to see if we want to collaborate, don't arise to the substantial, extensive, continuous, and systematic contacts required for general jurisdiction. The wheels of interstate and international economy would come falling off if every time Eli Lilly wanted to talk to somebody about whether they wanted to collaborate with Eli Lilly, the other party was subject to general personal jurisdiction in Indiana for all purposes. Nobody would want to deal with anybody in a forum state if those were the rules, and clearly those contacts do not rise to the level of general personal jurisdiction. The declaration submitted to the district court from Mr. Kerwan from Sanofi France establishes the facts that lead to the inescapable conclusion that there is no general personal jurisdiction in this case. Sanofi France doesn't manufacture goods or services in Indiana, does not advertise products in the state of Indiana. It doesn't maintain an office in the state. It doesn't own, possess, or use real property in the state of Indiana. It has no employees in the state of Indiana. None of the hallmarks of general personal jurisdiction are present in this case.
Your opponent indicated that the discovery with your corporate agent was truncated. What do you have to say about that?
The discovery, first of all, there was extensive discovery provided to Purdue during the briefing of this motion. There was a deposition, a full-day deposition of a corporate representative of Sanofi France. Documents were produced. All the correspondence and agreements that are in the record were provided to Purdue as part of that discovery process. The additional discovery that Purdue said it needed related to these contacts with Eli Lilly, which are not related at all to the subject matter of this lawsuit. The district court appropriately viewed that as unnecessary to the resolution of the case and specifically referenced Purdue's request for additional discovery in its decision and said, I've looked at these issues. I believe that all the discovery and evidence I need to evaluate the issues has already been provided, and I think that was an appropriate decision here. In sum, the district court correctly evaluated the issues here and concluded that Sanofi France, with no contacts with the state of Indiana, is not subject to specific personal jurisdiction here, nor is it subject to general personal jurisdiction. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Malauulu. Is there any time remaining? There is no time remaining. In that case, we'll thank both counsel for their fine arguments today and take the case under advisement.